Football is back, and BetMGM is inviting new customers to join the huddle and enjoy the action like never before. Sign up today using bonus code CHAMPION, and your first wager is risk-free up to $1,000. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Virginia only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-532-3500.
Hi, welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk. Again, John, Dave and myself are going to look back over Leinster's narrow victory down in Limerick last weekend, look forward to our game against the Scarlets, and of course look forward to the Six Nations and the Irish squad that was just announced. So lads, a 13-10 victory against Munster, we'll take that. But if they had had a kicker, it might have been a bit different.
Discuss. Or if they'd have scored after the 11th minute or whatever it was, it might have been a bit different. When I saw us going 10 behind, it was, you know, I was feeling a bit Saracens-y. Or I don't know if you remember a game against Claremont. I think it might have been the Brock James drop kick game where we went 10-0 down really quickly. And Jamie Heaslip scored a try to bring us back. I think it might have been that one, 2010.
Yeah.
Quarter final in the RDS. So I had a weird feeling then, all right, that we weren't going to win. And I had a funny one as well with Munster. So I think we did well to get back to where we did. But, you know, it was a game for the purists in many ways. It was a good contest. You know, it was a good, hard game. But there wasn't a lot of flowing running rugby, apart from that one little wonder try with a lovely grubber. And the taking give from Hugo Keenan was, the finish was great, but that was a thing of beauty.
That's probably the moment of skill of the game.
Yeah, I think so. Munster did what Munster do. And like, they are improving. If they keep going, you know, they're going to be knocking our asses back. Johan van Graan's record against us alone should spur them on to greater things. What is it? Eight out of nine losses or something like that? I think it was 7 out of 8 before that game. So yeah, it was good to see two. Everybody was anticipating with the two full teams out. It wasn't maybe the cracker we expected in some ways, but like I said, it was a good contest. It was a good hard match, and everybody got stuck into each other. And both sides, I've heard both sides giving out about decisions and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I think we could have been a bit further behind and had too much to make up if it hadn't been for JJ's few fluffs and B, them not scoring again after 11 minutes.
I think it's funny that you see people complaining about decisions again from both sides. And yet the one thing that actually got punished out of the game was a decision that was something that nobody had seen or complained about or had mentioned up until the guy ended up getting cited and banned. So
I saw a GIF of it and I had to look about 10 times to see what's the incident here. Yes, eventually I saw it, but it looked quite banal. I mean, okay, it looked like head on head, but, you know, it looked a very quick, fleeting moment of head on head. Didn't look intentional. It just looked something that happened. But
no, I don't think it was.
That's the way the rules are now.
He was reckless as to the safety of another player, I suppose, is the way it is. I mean, it's interesting that John says that Munster are improving, and kind of there is an element of that. A lot of people thought so before the game, including to a certain extent myself. But, you know, Leinster aren't playing well and they beat Munster by 3 or 4 points. Leinster are playing well, they beat Munster by 3 or 4 points. Munster just get beaten by 3 or 4 points by the better teams. You know, it's hard to know, because Munster would have been quite confident coming into this game, and this would have been a significant, you know, psychic setback, to quote or to paraphrase the chief rugby correspondent of the Irish Times. They thought after the Claremont game, they were convinced, or there was an air that they had turned the corner and they were improving, but they're exactly the same place as they've been, you know, 18 times out of the last, what is it, 20? You know, losing by
but like
narrow enough score, know, but still losing.
Yeah, and like, you know, we had opportunities. We had, there was two incidents that Tyburn stole ball on their line, sorry. Like, great defensive work, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And under different circumstances, they could have resulted in two tries for us. You know, and I'm sure when Leinster were reviewing it, they'd be quite disappointed that they didn't convert at least one of those. You know, only for his exceptional work at that breakdown. But, you know, we could have actually had two tries there. But they kind of seemed to shoot themselves in the foot. We, you know, they gave away whatever about missing the penalties. Like, that's just, these things happen. But they actually gave away the penalty just leading up that Sexton converted for, you know, 4 minutes into injury time of the first half. Like, it was an absolutely dumb penalty that Reese Marshall gave away that Sexton took. Their line out disintegrated. So, like, they have a lot of work ons to do. Wasn't that Leinster were creating oodles of things? Munster really were poor in sections of that game. Like, that Tyburn, when they won the penalty on the line, they cleared to touch and they lost the line out. So they gave us back the ball again. You know, like, if you're playing Leinster and Racing and Toulouse, like, those teams are going to punish you if you make those mistakes.
We've been quite critical of our line out over the last, you know, 2 or 3 months. And looking at the stats in the Pro 14, Munster's line out is as good/bad delete as applicable as ours. It's on, we're joint third or joint fourth in the league for our line out. So we might have problems, but they do have problems as well in their line out, and that's something we took advantage of. Although it was noticeable at one point that with a penalty that wasn't kickable, if you recall, it was about 5 or 6 meters out and it was well in the corner, that we opted to go for a scrum rather than a line out because we just weren't confident of taking the line out ball.
Yeah, and at the same time, we had James Ryan pilfering a fair bit of ball. You would have, you know, typical line out stealers are fellas who are built like Peter O'Mahony, easy to throw up by one guy. Whereas James Ryan is a big lad. It's not, okay, he's tall, but he's not very easy to hoist quickly. So, you know, it says a lot that he's stealing line outs. It's a good, you know, it's a good thing in our armory. Tyburn frame, or you know, he's got kind of the best of both worlds there. He's tall enough, but he's relatively light for a guy that tall, a rugby player that tall. So you can get him up, he'd be more the kind of build of a guy you'd be looking. James Ryan is more of a tight head lock, a guy that you'd expect to be staying on the deck as a cart horse, you know.
Tyburn is responsible for our try. A mistake by Tyburn is responsible for our try. Because our try, the line out throw was crooked. It was crooked. But Munster didn't get a jumper in the air because Tyburn was in the pod at the back. He saw it was going over the 15. And if you watch the match, if you watch it back, he aborts, his pod are going to lift him and he aborts it because he sees it's going over the 15. If he'd gotten into the air, the ref would have had no choice but to award the scrum/line out to Munster. But because they didn't put a jumper in the air and the ball went into the went outside the 15, the ref let play on.
Yeah, well, that's a little harsh on Tyburn, but fair enough.
It was crooked, though.
Yeah, it was definitely crooked.
Yeah.
I thought, but like another thing, like we went for an unusual bench selection of a 6-2 split, and both of our back subs were used by the 58th minute. So there was still 20-odd minutes that we were, you know, operating with no reserve back. And, like, Gibson Park had to come on the wing. So they persisted with kicking, like the kind of, and I think it might have actually possibly have been detrimental to Larmer's chances starting in the, certainly the first game of the Six Nations, because they put up, say, three, if not four kicks in the first quarter of an hour to him, and he,
and they weren't perfect.
But, like, but we weren't down there. So, I mean, like, there was a blizzard coming in at, yeah, before the match kicked off. So you got wingers standing on the wing, presumably cold, balls swirling around and whatever. But someone like Larmer, if he wants to be at that level, he has to make a better fist. He took his try fantastically well. But he has, you know, you have the ball in attack half the time and you're defending half the time. He needs to be able to dismantle those kicks from experienced internationals like Murray, because he'd be murdered if he's, you know, if DuPont is putting up bombs to him like that when we play France.
In fairness to Larmer, I agree with everything he said. Murray's bombs were inch perfect.
Yeah, he's back in action.
They were on a sixpence. But you know, they persist with that tackling and work down that side. They didn't really have anything else, though. There was no other kind of creativity or element of their back play that caused us any difficulty. Damien Deyende is a fantastic player, but by having him and Farrell together, two guys who want to play the same position and instinctually play the same position, two separate bodies can't, I mean, it's a law of physics, two separate bodies can't inhabit the same space, and it didn't work for them. They need somebody else beside him, because having him and Farrell beside one another is just not working. It'll be grand. You'll be able to run over the likes of Zebre or Benetton or any of the lesser teams. But once you get to the business end of the season, I mean, even the smaller backs that they'll face, like Gary Ringrose, will be more than capable of dealing with just players who appear to be, and they're better players than this, but they're playing just two Bosch merchants. That's how they're playing as. They're better.
The bludgeon and the bludgeon. Yeah. Instead of the rapier and the bludgeon.
Yeah, they're not offering anything. And I thought our centres looked, when they got the ball and they used the ball, they looked far, far more incisive and far more dangerous. They offered more threats in different ways. And, you know, everybody's been saying, oh, we're finally beginning to see what Larkin brings, are we?
Do you know, watching that match, it reminded me a little bit of watching Ireland. Sorry, if you're looking at it from a Munster perspective, looking at Ireland when they were kind of very bad in the 90s, they put in a great opening quarter, lots of huff and puff, get the try, they look very competitive, but there's very little substance to them. And once you kind of weather the storm, you know, like, I don't think Leinster were kind of challenged in the second half. Like, they didn't, I mean, I was just looking at some of the stats. Possession was kind of the same, 50-50. Munster had two clean breaks. They had 13 defenders. I mean, I can't remember 13 defenders been beaten. Leinster had 33 defenders been beaten. But Munster missed 33 tackles. Like, I just think that they are quite a blunt instrument. And they showed it when they, you know, by not scoring for 68 minutes.
Well, you look at it this way. In the last 180 minutes between Leinster and Munster, Munster failed to score for 144 of them.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's a significant thing. I mean, they didn't score for 76 minutes the last time, didn't score for 68 minutes this time. They have to. Now, to a certain extent, I mean, a part of that is, I mean, We said it last week about JJ Hanrahan and how his confidence can be quite fragile at times. And he misses kicks that he should really get. If you remember against Northampton, he missed one almost identically to the one we missed, or to the one he missed rather than hit the post, but the one he missed against us. Remember the one that resulted after the whole, or around the whole Jamie George sideline guy, Fandango, he missed that penalty, if you recall. And it was the exact same kind of penalty that he missed against us. I mean, it wasn't that far out. It wasn't really at that much of an angle. And it's a kick that a guy at his level, and a guy who is at his level, I mean, he's a very good player, should be getting. But for whatever reason, his confidence seems to be quite fragile.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it cost them the game, because there's lots of other instances.
There's still 68 minutes left.
But you have to convert those opportunities, because 40 minutes. You know, but look, we got our win out of it. It's kind of brought us back into within a point of Ulster. We still have a game in hand. We have that game in hand next weekend against Scarlets. But before we get on to that, let's just a quick look back at some of the other games. There was a few of the matches on. I saw Scarlets were beaten by Cardiff. They obviously got the Dai Young bounce.
I watched some of that game. I couldn't watch it all. And the reason I couldn't watch it all was because it was shite, a lot of it. I had it on, you know, I was watching it. I wasn't watching it live. So I got a bit bored and fast forwarded it. And I didn't get to see very much of it because, yeah, it was fairly, fairly dire. Maybe I fast forwarded through all the best bits, but I did stop if I saw scores or if I saw anything like that. And it just didn't look like they were going to lose. Although they gave it a good go, but it just didn't look like Cardiff were going to lose at any stage of the game. Scarlets are not in a great place. They have a lot of injuries, which we'll probably get to later.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never know. They could get a bounce back against us. They have a lot more fit backs than we have, you know.
Thing to remember is that Dai Young is actually a very, very good coach. And he'll go into that Cardiff team, a team that has not performed in line with its lineup, perhaps. Regularly hasn't. But he'll go in and he'll install, you know, he'll put an emphasis on the basics. And that's what, I mean, I saw bits of the game as well. It wasn't a good game. It wasn't a game worth spending 80 minutes watching. But you could see that Cardiff he stripped their game back. So he's obviously going to rebuild upon that basis. But, you know, they did the basics well. And that's what he'll build on.
Team, Dave. You never know.
Your allegiance will switch back, John, will it?
They never had my allegiance.
A diehard, we know. Your official second favourite team, Connacht, played the Ospreys on Sunday. And they romped into a 17-5 lead at halftime. And then they just collapsed and blew it, losing 26-20 in the end.
And giving a BP away to the Ospreys as well.
Yeah, and once again, somebody makes a monumental error. This time it's your man Papali'i. Okay, they had a penalty on the halfway line, but he decides to tap and go himself. And you could see Caelan Blades' face. Like last week, it was Marmion, I think, that was nearly having a conniption when the number eight Boyle took it from a space to scrum under the sticks. And this time, another number eight taps and goes from 50 odd meters outside, you know, thinking he's going to run through everyone. Like just crazy stuff. Go down, take a kick if there was no time. But they could have got a line out, and they could have, you know, had an opportunity to snatch a victory there, and they absolutely blew it. So more or less meaning that Munster will top that pool now, and Connacht are struggling with Cardiff or fighting with Cardiff for second spot. But I think they're pretty much 11 points now behind Munster, with the same number of games played. So they're looking like they're not going to reach the take the final position in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was.
I was just going to say, 100% there's leadership issues, but like they, when a team gets a 17-5 lead, they should never throw that away. I mean, that's a 10-point lead. I was watching that game at halftime and I had to go off and do something.
Folks, I'd like to remind you that Jason is an accountant.
Sorry, yes, 12-point lead, sorry. And I went off and I came back, 20 minutes into the second half and they were down, 17-19. The Ospreys had come back. I couldn't believe that that happened, that they had conceded the two tries. And I don't know, I think they need to have a serious talk to themselves, because if you were a Connacht supporter, you'd have pulled out half your hair by now.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, there seems to be leadership issues in that kind of team. I mean, I saw they brought Bundy on to try and dug Ospreys out of the hole, whichever way you want to look at it, they brought Bundy on to try and put some shape on it, but there's only so much you can do. Connacht are a very good team when they have everybody fit and available. When they don't, they do have problems. They have a relatively shallow squad. They have some good players, but they have a relatively shallow squad.
Yeah. I saw Bundy come on as well, and I thought, oh, here we go, lads. He's going to save the day. Wait till you see. And he tried, fair play to him, but the day wasn't for saving. I mean, even if they'd, if they'd managed to do, because you said, Jason, they're in a tussle with Cardiff. Now, in fairness, Cardiff are two games ahead of them. Cardiff, for some bizarre reason, the Scarlets-Cardiff match was pulled forward from round 14 before the fixtures were even announced for round 12, 13, 14. Like, what's that about? Like, we don't know when the fixtures are, but we know that when they are, we're going to have a problem fulfilling them. So we'll just play it now. Like, anyway.
Maybe they wanted to play with the full decks rather than, during the Six Nations when they're going to be down to their seconds team and mightn't be a
fair enough point. I'm sure they knew exactly what they were doing. It just looks shambolic because I'm sure they knew what the fixtures were going to be, but the fixtures hadn't been announced. So it just, none of the rest of us knew what the fixtures were going to be.
They knew what was happening.
So Connacht should be, if Connacht can get their act together a bit, they should be definitely good for second place. There's three teams there together, Cardiff, Scarlets and Connacht are all within, 27, 26, 25 points. But they've played 12 games, Cardiff, and Scarlets have played 11. Connacht have only played 10. So there's hope for them there for second place. But you can be sure that both Cardiff and Scarlets are going to be trying to get into the top competition in Europe next season. And I think there's a hard cutoff there. Only one of them is going to make it. Am I right? No, both of them could make it.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I think both of them can make it.
But you'd have to question whether or not that Rainbow Cup is going to go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sure people who know more about this stuff than me will have a more accurate answer, but I can't see how it can go ahead. I just can't. I mean, we're not letting South Africans into the country at all. So I don't know how you're going to let, 150 of them in.
Yeah. I think there might be some merit. Might make an interesting spectacle. I don't know. I'm sure you saw it as well. A few weeks ago, they announced that Australia were offering for France, South Africa, and the Lions to all travel to Australia during the summer. During our summer, that'll be an interesting matchup. France get to play the Lions, and obviously Australia and South Africa too. I don't know. Was there anything official in it, Dave? You probably know better than me.
It's the first I've heard of it.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I dreamt it. So I thought.
Well, you're right. But there was also talk as an alternative, was that they wanted to have, say, a Lions, right? So you have Ireland and Scotland, Wales will play Argentina, like a kind of a lot, I don't know what you call them, a Lions from the Southern Hemisphere. So you'd have some sort of combo team of South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, and Argentina.
And traditionally, the South American touring team has been called the Jaguares, but they're using that for something else now. I have heard talk, I mean, it's been repeated in French newspapers by journalists, so I don't know if there's anything behind it, of the Lions touring France, if they can't go to South Africa. Because the Lions are a touring team. I mean, people are resistant to the idea of Lions playing at home and people coming to them, but the idea that the Lions could tour France and play, you know, a full test series against France and some of their bigger clubs. Some of the clubs have kind of mentioned in passing that it's a ridiculous idea. Others have said, where do we sign up? So, look, we don't know what's going to happen. Look, at this stage, we don't know what's going to happen beyond the end of this set of fixtures, let alone what's going to happen in the summer or the autumn or whatever. We're not even certain. At this point, we're not even certain that the Six Nations is going to go ahead because of French COVID rules and rules around Brexit. So talking about the summer is looking a bit too far into the distance.
Australia would be an ideal spot in terms of COVID because like they had, what was it, golf or tennis or something there recently where they had people, one of those sports that's shit.
Tennis,
okay.
Australian Open.
Well, I knew it was unopen, so I knew it had to be golf or tennis. But they have it all down, you know, to a T in terms of hotel isolation, all of that stuff. So you could conceivably bring in a couple of hundred rugby players from around the globe, get them all.
The girlfriend of one of the players was very disappointed and upset because she actually had to wash her own hair.
Well, I mean, one of the players himself, I think he managed to lose nearly all the sponsors. Novak Djokovic made an absolute twat of himself complaining about it because it's 14 days. It's the same as Rob Kearney and his partner had to go through. At least they did it with a bit of class and good humor. But you have to go through 14 days of absolute quarantine. You are in that hotel room for 2 weeks and you don't get out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, it could be signed up for. It just sounds like a good solution to me because you've got, as long as you're there 14 days, there's pretty much no COVID in the country. So, you know, as long as everybody has been through all the procedures, then you can just do what you like and, you know, act normally, almost crazy as that sounds on this side of the world. So it might be a solution, but certainly going to South Africa is not going to be a solution anytime soon.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, they're not as badly hit, partially because it's summertime down there, but they're not as badly hit as like Brazil, UK, or United States, but they're working on it. Give it a bit of time. And especially when it goes into their winter, such as it is, during our summer, it's not going to be a time to be in South Africa. So I would, dollars to donuts, that if the Lions do go ahead, wherever they are, it won't be South Africa. Whether it's Australia, France, anywhere else, it's not going to be South Africa, is my guess.
Yeah, I think you're right. By the way, lads, turn our attention to our game.
Just to finish that off. And that's a loss for the sport of rugby because for me, the most authentic Lions tour is always a tour to South Africa. That's the Lions' reputation is based on tourists to South Africa. That's why the Lions are a thing, really. And it's why the Lions remained a thing because of the 97 tour. It proved that the Lions could exist in a professional sphere. So missing a tour to South Africa, I mean, obviously it can't go ahead from what we know anyway. But it is a loss. It's a loss to the sport.
And the spawns that it brings into the country.
Yeah, huge.
Like, you know, South Africa is fairly, you know, underdeveloped. They have a lot of the social problems there. And if you have 40,000 British and Irish people with a few disposable quid in their pockets, like, that's quite important to the economy, you know. And then if there's talk of maybe swapping that tour with Australia, and maybe they might do that, but like Australia need the money from the Lions tours to survive. Like the cash, not so much from the you know, the fans buying pints and pies and all the rest, but from the actual money that the fans buying tickets into the ground and the TV rights, etc., that keeps them going for 12 years until the next Lions tour.
If the last Lions tour, the ARU would be completely and utterly tits up broke.
Yeah.
Actually bankrupt as opposed to just broke, which it is at the moment.
Mm. Yeah. Well, anyway, look, I mean, there's greater things out there than back in rugby matches. So, you know, it'll be whatever it is, it is. Like, and there's not much that people can do about it. It's only a game of rugby. But there is a game of rugby.
I was going to say there's greater things out there than rugby matches. And when we find out what it is, we'll tell you.
Well, true enough. Anyway, we played the Scarlets on Saturday. We were supposed to play these lads last November, I think. But they are fourth in their table. And we're obviously second, so we're 1 point behind Ulster. And it's our game in hand. But we're obviously, we've lost 17 players to Carton House and the Irish squad. Now, I had a look. There's 11 Scarlets in the Welsh squad, so they're pretty much, you know, heavily affected with 5 forwards and 6 backs. So, like, I'd imagine our seconds are slightly better than their seconds.
Well, I went through our team and I went through, I think I sent you a couple of suggestions from a Welsh person I know who... You know, and the look of their back line and the look of our back line.
He's probably a Cardiff fan.
He's actually an Ospreys fan, but however.
Next team, John?
Are they my next team?
Are they your next team?
Well, as I've always said, if I was going to support the Welsh club, it would be the Ospreys. And after that, it would be the Scarlets.
We're getting you the jersey.
After that, just out of pure feeling sorry for them, it would be the Dragons. So Cardiff would have always been my least favourite Welsh team, unless I'm in Cardiff, in which case I would deny all knowledge. But what I was going to say is our back line is absolutely decimated by injury and call-ups and, you know, this, that and the other. We were pretty decimated as it was. And now having lost 17 players, in fairness, most of them, more of them forwards, but we're looking like I couldn't make a 23 in the backs. I don't know who we're going to put at 22. I could maybe get to 22 and that's it. And you're putting some, you know, some seriously young guys in there. Like, you're going to have, say, Max O'Reilly at full back.
To play against Munster, though.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen with Tadhg Furlong and James Lowe. There's a suggestion that Furlong could be playing. James Lowe, I don't know. You'd think they'd want to give him a bit of game time ahead of the Six Nations, but he might not be quite ready, so you might not see him. So if you don't, and Dave Kearney is only just back from injury as well. And we don't know the status of Keane Keller. He hasn't been seen in a while. And, you know, pretty much you'd have to think if he was fit, he would have been playing in a few again, like the Connacht game, for example.
Well, Keane Keller was name-checked by Lancaster in his post-match press conference this week.
Right. Well,
I just went through the list of the guys that are away in Ireland camp, and I tried to put just to kind of match off, well, what guys can come in and not so much fill their boots, but can certainly... you know, come in as a replacement. So take Will Connors. You know, you've got Connors and Doris from the back row, Ruddock. So you've got Josh Murphy, Jack Conan, Ryan Bard can come onto the back row. You know, you've got Furlong and Healy are going to be taken out of the squad. So you've got Michael Bent and Ed Byrne that can fill in there. Keller is away with Ireland, so Cronin is cover. Toner can cover for Ryan. Scott Penny and Fardy, also back rowers, can cover for Ruddock and Van de Fleer.
Penny's
and, you know,
Dan Levy.
Dan Levy, of course. You know, and then you've got, as I say, if you take the backs, like as you mentioned, you know, Lowe could play. I don't know whether he will, but you, Carney's back from injury as well. Ross Byrne, you've got his brother, can cover. Luke McGrath's obviously going to cover for Gibson Park. You know, like, and then I'd like to see some younger, like, you know, Frawley perhaps covering for Sexton, or Hawkshaw coming in, or even, you know, like, sort of for our A game, I thought our standout player that day was Osborne. So, you know, there is cover there, and you don't have to, like, you know, and I've obviously left out some other, like that guy Max that you mentioned. He was penciled in to play in the original Stevenson's Day fixture against Munster. So, you know, they obviously think highly enough of him if they were going to play him down in Thomond.
I mean, Max O'Reilly's a talent. He's been good for the Irish under-20s. Cruelly robbed of a Grand Slam this year. But he was poor against Ulster. Against Ulster A, sorry, I should say. Poor against Connacht as well. But, you know, those were the game against Connacht was his first senior start. So, I mean, that's not his career. So, and he's a guy who I have no doubt will have a long and successful career with Leinster because he's a bloody good player. So there are guys there. There's guys like Andrew Smith as well. You mentioned Frawley. You mentioned Hawkshaw. There's reports in the wild that Adam Byrne has been spotted.
Tom Roman around Thomond Park.
There's guys there. What kind of condition they're in, what kind of form they're in, what kind of fitness they're in is another matter. But it's not as if they're going to be facing the first choice Scarlett's back line, which can be fearsome in itself. That's not going to happen because they're all off at Wales as well. And the ones who aren't are either suspended or injured.
They've definitely got more experience than we're going to have in the backs, but they've got more quality is another thing. But like, if you look at some of the people that I would expect might play, Furlong might play. He's just back from injury, 13 months out. Dave Kearney, just back from injury. Liam Turner, we're probably going to need at 13, just back from injury. You know, there's
Kearney was out for one game injured.
And so was Liam Turner. It's not like they'll need to program the RDS into their GPS because they've forgotten how to get there. It's been so long. I mean, they were out. And I know the game's not in the RDS, but they've only been, like Michael Bent is back from injury, but he only missed, you know, one game. Dave Kearney missed a game. Liam Turner missed a game. These aren't guys. They're not long term injuries. These aren't injuries. They're returning from niggles and knocks.
I mean, if
it was a European match and if the game they missed was a European match and they were needed for it, they would have been available for it. You know, that kind of a way.
Maybe. Well, we shall see. We should have enough quality in the forwards, though. If we don't get Furlong, if Bent is okay, we've got Dooley and Cronin. Like, that's a good front row. And Fardy and Toner, that's a good second row.
Ross Maloney there as well.
You've got Ross Maloney to cover there too. You've got Levy, Conan, Josh Murphy for a back row. That's, you know, I've no worries about the starting pack. You know, even if a couple of them are missing, I've no worries. Scott Penny is injured, I think, but you know, we should be all right in the back row. We've plenty of depth. It's the outside backs. Like you could conceivably have Andrew Smith. Even if Callagher's playing and you put Dave Kearney at fullback, you're going to have Andrew Smith and Max O'Reilly in some combination at 23 and one of the wings, perhaps, depending on whether Lowe is going. You know, it's there's a lot. We'll know this time. We'll know in 12 hours or 15 hours or whatever it is.
We managed to get it completely wrong last week.
Yeah, I
didn't
think we were that far off.
I don't think so either. We were wrong where it counts.
Well, we got more right than wrong, but yeah, we did get a good bit wrong. But yeah, we'll see. I would hope that we would have too much for the Scarlets in their current shape, but that's no guarantee. Welsh teams have this habit of coming out when you least expect it and running. Like, they always have good skills, and even their, if they don't have the most talented backs, they'll always have good basics, and they'll always have, like, they've got fellas like McNichol, who's a crusader, I think he was, back in the day. He's a serious proposition. He hasn't been in great form, in fairness, but he's a serious player. They've enough quality there, enough experience there in the back line to cause us trouble. I just think that if the old cliche about the forwards deciding who wins the game, that we should have too much for them in that. And that's where I think we're going to win it.
I've never seen a bad Scarlets back. I've never seen a bad Scarlets back.
Yeah, they just seem to have to be able to.
It's a bad Scarlets team, though, Dave.
What?
It is.
It's the bad Scarlets team.
Oh, it is. They're suffering. But I mean, Scarlets do produce good players.
I'm probably over-egging it. They're an average.
Yeah, they are. Oh, no, they certainly are. But what I'm saying is, I mean, Scarlets do produce good young players who play rugby the right way and have good skills, as John was saying, and know what they're about. Now, they might be brilliant, and they might be brilliant, or they might not be brilliant, but they're always competent, is the point I'm making.
Yeah, they're suffering from Pivac over missing Pivac Pivac. So they haven't really shown since he left, and he had them. Like, go back to when they were lashing us out of it in semi-finals and stuff in 2017. They were a serious outfit, on the decline a bit since. And as soon as he left, they seemed to fall off a cliff. So they gave
us and Munster. No, I was going to say consecutive games. It wasn't, because they beat us in the quarterfinal. Now, unless if memory serves, John.
No, it was the semi-final of the league.
Was it not the quarterfinal of the league?
And sure, we've never been in a quarter final of the league. They came to the RDS. We were first place.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, you're right. You're right, of course. Yes, you are. Sorry.
And then they beat Munster and Lansdowne Road, because I was at that.
They beat Munster. They beat ourselves and Munster. Actually, they lashed ourselves and Munster out of it in consecutive games.
Completely. Yeah. Sure, they had 14 men against us, and they were still running in tries, and Cubby Boy was doing his thing, and, you know, they were on fire, and we were chucking.
It was a flash in the pan, because the following year we beat them in a final and a semi final.
The one thing is that we're talking about favorite other teams, my favorite non Irish team is Scarlets, because they do play lovely rugby.
They used to.
We didn't play them last season at all, in the aborted season. But we did play them twice, home and away, the season before that. They beat us over there. I think they beat us 23-21. And then we beat them 22-17 in Dublin. So, you know, they were quite close encounters. Again, they were probably, certainly the first match of the season when they beat us in Clonetley. And it was around this time, it was the 25th of January, 19, that we beat them in Dublin. So that would have been a Six Nations affected encounter where both teams would have been shorn of their two, you know, of their sets of internationals.
James Lowe scored the off try. James Lowe scored the winning try that day.
Did he? God bless your memory.
If memory serves. If it's the game I'm thinking of anyway.
I'll give you that one, Dave.
Yeah. Just, I want to get on to the Ireland, but just before we do, there's one other match this weekend, and I only mention it because of what happened. Treviso take on Munster, but they have managed to acquire a very noticeable defensive coach. They've got Paul Gustard, ex-England, ex-Saracens, defence coach, and recently ex-Harlequins head coach. But he was sacked or didn't re-sign for them. Some sort of turmoil there anyway. But between the jigs and the reels, he's managed to up sticks and leave and go to Italy and get a nice little gig for himself in Treviso.
I would suggest that his signing for Treviso is the biggest coaching signing coup since we signed Lancaster.
Yeah, definitely. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
But like, and I don't mean to, but like, okay, London's a pretty cool place to live. But a lot of where the other rugby clubs, Bath's lovely as well. But there's a lot of rugby clubs in pretty ordinary places in the UK. Like, Treviso is magnificent. Like, you know, it's a no-brainer to move there.
You can have all the sweaters you want.
You could.
You can have it's a house made out of sweaters.
Yeah. Like, that's a significant signing to get him. I wonder if your man Marco Bortolami is going to be looking over his shoulder thinking, hang on now. If I lose a few games, will the board sack me and bring your man in full time?
You could do worse.
Could do.
No, it's quite the signing coup. He's got a big job ahead of him. Although Treviso are a good side dressed as a very poor one at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not fair. They're a mediocre to good side dressed as a very poor one.
But they seem to be turmoil. They got rid of Crawley. They sacked a few of their senior players, including Keighley.
Yeah.
As mentioned last week, it's gone to Glasgow. But they obviously decided to clean house.
Mm.
Anyway, boys, just the Ireland squad was announced during the week. As I mentioned earlier, it was 17 Leinster players. But a couple of questions, though. Do you think they've rewarded form for that? Or have they just gone for the tried and trusted, like, and I give an example. Ty Furlong hasn't played a game in nearly a year, and is now obviously he's an excellent player and has got a reputation as long as his arm, but he hasn't played for a year.
I think for guys like Furlong, who's he's an unquestionably world class player. You're always going to take a chance on him. Others you might leave for a week with their provinces to see how they get on in a Pro 14 game. But for the genuine world-class players, you just bring them straight in.
Yeah, I don't know. We discussed this quite a lot. Does any, with the possible exception of England or France team in the Six Nations, ever reward for them? Most international coaches go with the tried and trusted. It's harder to get into the team than get out of the team. It's just that's the way it is. It's conservative selection, just because you're under pressure to win matches. You're not. Yeah, and if you don't play two or three of your big guys and you lose, you get shot, you know. IRFU or SRU or WRU take a dim view of, you know, of your experimentation in the Six Nations. You can experiment in the Autumn Internationals, especially in the lesser game, but unless it's against Italy, there's no fucking experimenting in the Six Nations. So, yes, it is a little bit.
I'm not talking about bringing in Hawkshaw, right? Like, I'm not saying that. No, but I'm just, you know, like, for example, we've seen, say, Gavin Coombs play, and he's been outstanding for Munster in probably 85% of the games I've seen him play. He's been really, really good. And we pick, like, it's a very peculiar squad selection. For example, we picked only two loose head props. And yeah, we bring 5 second rows and we have 5 centers.
Yeah, that's mad.
And I'm scratching my head wondering why, you know, we're light in some areas, we're heavy in others, and I don't expect them to bring, you know, complete rookies as an example, Hawkshaw, but you know, you've got a guy like Coombs who's playing off, or even I don't expect him to bring Ryan Baird into the match day or even the 35. because I don't think he's played enough and he's not experienced enough. But Coombs has, like, he's genuinely starting for Munster. He's pushed their, you know, if they select the team as we would, as we think that they will, that they'll play Caelan Darris at 8 and they'll pick CJ at 6. He's getting picked for Munster at 6 in the Irish internationals, you know, starting Ireland position. I just find this a kind of a very odd selection. So,
I'd give him a go for sure. I'm very, as I think I said last week, I'm very impressed with the guy. I'd be giving him a go. If you look at the players that are, like, there's kind of two teams plus you can select any set of players, but, like, let's say Ross Byrne, Craig Casey, Stuart McCluskey, Dave Heffernan, Tom O'Toole, and then take your pick, probably Ulton Dolan out of the second row. Like, you've two 15s plus those guys. So it's not, you know, that's one of the things you want going to Carlton House, is you want even teams. You want to have a full team and a team to play against them, possibles and probables or whatever way you want to look at it. Just two teams for repping matches and repping teams. So, yeah, I think there's room in there for a Gavin Coombs or a whoever. Even instead of one of the second rows. And like you said as well, Jason, 5 centres? Really? Why? What do you need 5 for? I mean, you need 2 in each team if you've got to have 30 guys for playing against each other.
Yeah. And like Larmer has played in the centre for Ireland in the past as well. So you kind of have 5.5.
Yeah, for sure.
I think some of the centres could potentially end up playing elsewhere, depending on how form shakes out.
But which of them do?
I know which of them do. I'm not saying that they should. I'm saying that they could, because Farrell hasn't shown himself to be the world's most brilliant selector. At the end of the day, naming a Six Nations squad is basically just a branding exercise. I mean, he could pick 23 players not in the squad to start the Six Nations game. It's not like it's a rule or anything. So. I don't think it matters that much.
As an aside, there are almost double the amount of backs from Munster as there are forwards. Did you ever think you'd hear that said?
Those are shit, the Munster forwards there.
Well, it's just if you go back to 2000 and, you know, any time before 2009, let's say, or 2010 even, it was the other way around. Like, you got the whole Leinster back line with the two Munster halfbacks and the Munster pack plus maybe Simon Easterby or whatever Ulster man was looking good. That was it. That was the Irish team. And yeah, Now you've got CJ and Peter O'Mahony in the starting Irish pack. That's it.
Tyke Byrne, would he make the starting 15 now?
I don't think so. I think he kind of international level only. He's a little bit of a falls between two stools player, so he ends up at 19 or 20 rather than 4, 5, or 6. Like, the guy is very versatile. He can play 6 or 8 as well as 4 and 5. So I just think that at a high level, you want that your specialist guys, and he's just not quite at the races as a specialist. Like, he brings an awful lot more. He's a fabulous player, and the stuff he does on the deck and stuff you don't get from other guys his size is phenomenal. But he's just, there's just something, like, you want a guy who's a little bit bigger at international level for a second row, and you want a guy who's a little bit faster, although he is quite fast for a big guy.
Not necessarily fast, but you want a guy who's a bit more of a power guy, which is where he loses out to both Henderson and Rue, I think.
Power in the second row, but if you're playing him at 6 or 8, pace.
Yeah,
is my point. And that they're the kind of stools he's falling in between. But he's a phenomenal player. I really like him as a player. I just think he maybe suffers from
that. He's 5.75 rather than...
Yeah, he's always going to be number 19 or number 20 in your international starting pack.
The other thing is, to get the best out of him, like Scarlett said, you kind of have to build your plan around them. I'm not sure that really works at international level. That's the thing. You can't really build a plan around one guy at international level. At international level, you have to have, to be successful, you have to have a lot of arrows in your quiver. You can't be like Scarlett's. Remember, Scarlett's basically based their entire forward play around him, and their entire ruck defense was based around him as well. That's not going to work at international level. It's just simply not going to work. So, but he's a great guy. I think he, I mean, out of all the guys we were talking about, guys who shouldn't be in the squad, he certainly deserves to be in the squad. I mean, there's no question of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, just looking at the squad, like, it is quite a new, there's a lot of new fresh faces in there, say, post World Cup. There's 9 or 10 new faces in there that didn't go to the World Cup. So he has kind of brought new blood and new life into it. But I'm not sure if they're the right players. I mean, I think, like, Keane Healy's kind of tapering down towards the end of his career. And Dave Kilcoyne has played one and a bit matches since he's come back from a long-term injury. So we're very light at loose head. I find some of the selections quite weird.
But I mean,
just before we go, lads. So Ulster.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, because we're kind of running out of time. Right. Ulster have made a quite a big signing from the former European Player of the Year.
Let's hear Jason say his name.
Nakarawa. I couldn't pronounce his first name.
Leone.
Yeah, it's tough.
Too bad. So they've signed him from, like, again, you know, we hear a lot about the financial situation in all the clubs, but Ulster seem to have, I suppose they probably had a bit of cash from Curtsia's departure.
They freed up a few bob, and the fact is nobody has any money anywhere. So,
and also, he's a bit of a loose cannon in terms of his, like, he hasn't worked out so well in Glasgow. Have you heard much about him in the last year?
No, I just after the World Cup that he came home from, or he delayed his return back to France from Fiji.
And got
faked out.
Yeah, so he's a bit of a loose cannon. So that you know, somebody like Dan McFarland may be able to really get him under control, like the way they did with what was your man?
Nick Williams.
Yeah. They got him on the right burgers, and they got him, and he's a great player. If you get him going down the right road.
The thing about Nakarawa was he was always very, very happy in Glasgow. I mean, it worked out for him in Glasgow. He played the best rugby of his career in Glasgow. And if he can't actually get a contract in Glasgow, then Belfast's the next best thing.
Yeah, true enough.
You want that mix of cold and sectarianism, it's the only place for you.
I mean, on that great note, we shall end. Thanks very much, boys. Thanks a million for watching. If you are following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a like, thumbs up and a subscription. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.